And welcome into the B Squared Podcast. And today is a special podcast, one that Brian Beto and myself, Jordan Burnfield, have been waiting for a very long time. And I don't even know how to begin this because I think my brain exploded on Saturday because the Cubs won the pennant. They have won the National League. They are in the World Series. And as we record tonight on Monday, October 24th, World Series Game 1 is tomorrow in Cleveland against the Indians. Beto, I am still riding so high from Saturday night. It just feels like we're in some sort of alternate universe.
It really does. And it's so difficult to think about anything else. And we talked a little bit about this last week when we were in the midst of this series, however, of the NLCS. But now that it's over and the Cubs have officially won the pennant for the first time in our lifetimes and the generation before us' lifetime, that it's just everything that you could have imagined. You wanted to feel a certain way when it happened, and that's the way I felt. And Saturday night happens, and it was weird because I always thought that when this occurred, or the Cubs won the pennant, I know we still have four more wins to go, but I always felt like I'm gonna be so nervous that they're gonna blow it late in the game, and I expected to just wait for the other shoe to drop and be even when they did win it. But when the time came last Saturday night and the Cubs are up, and I get it, they were up 5, a pretty comfortable lead with the way Hendricks was pitching and bridging it straight to Chapman, that we're statistically speaking and odds speaking, we are in great shape. However, I never really doubted the fact that they were going to close it out. I just felt different. And even in like 03, I kind of maybe had this little like, oh God, what could happen here sort of thing. However, even with all the history, just maybe because this team has played that way, like not caring about any of the past history because they weren't around for it and they just don't listen to that crap, I kind of felt, it kind of carried over to the fan base. I felt like a lot of ways where I was never really nervous that something was going to go wrong. I wasn't thinking about what could happen in a negative way. I was starting to think about what was about to happen in a positive way. And they get the final out, and it just was, you know, the sports peak for me. At some point, I grew up during the 90s. Michael Jordan's last shot with the Bulls in 98 might be number one, or I guess 1A now that the Cubs have gone to the World Series. But we followed this team for so long in sports in general to get that moment on Saturday night. We still have one more that could top that moment. But for the time being, of course, you should enjoy it because it's never happened before in our lifetimes.
It's incredible. And it's interesting what you say, because I was fortunate enough to be at the game with my dad. And we're sitting there in our seats, and I felt from where we were sitting that the crowd was really positive throughout the game. And that being said, they scored 2 in the first inning off of Kershaw. They scored immediately. Fowler doubles, Bryant singles. They're on the board with 2 batters into the game, which obviously is going to change the tenor of it, because you could see from the get-go that Clayton Kershaw was not going to have it that night. The Cubs pounded him. Kyle Hendricks was phenomenal. I mean, really, after Andrew Toles singled to lead off the game on the first pitch, they get the double play 3 pitches later. I mean, it just never – there were really never any moments of panic. And the Dodgers never got a runner to second base. It was never in doubt. But watching it – it's funny that you say this, because I watched the 9th inning back a couple of hours ago while I was exercising from the television call, and they must have found the 10 or 15 – nervous, freaking out Cub fans, because they're zooming in on them in the 9th inning as if to show this narrative, like the Cub fans were waiting for the other shoe to drop. And maybe I didn't notice it from where I was sitting. It's very possible that there were plenty of other people acting like that, but I felt like the people sitting around us were all just jacked up. It was like no one said anything because you didn't want to say anything.
Sure,
it was like we were just waiting for the outs to count down. It wasn't what's going to happen that's a disaster. It was just, you don't want to say anything until the moment happens. But an hour before the game, Beto, we walked into the park. It was, the place was ready to pop. It was so electric in there well before first pitch. And then the way they played from the start of the game, they were so good. I mean, it was such a remarkable masterpiece, kind of a clincher game. And then when they won it, I've never in my life experienced a moment as a sports fan happier than what we saw on Saturday. Obviously, like you said, if they win the World Series, that will be the ultimate topper and will never probably be topped. But that moment when they won, it was so loud in there. I honestly don't think I've ever experienced a moment so loud at a sporting event. It was magical. I will never forget it. It was absolutely magical.
Yeah, and you should. And it's interesting, yeah, because obviously you had a view of the crowd. Mine was more TV-based and just drawing from my personal experience of not being nervous. And I felt like there were certain moments in the game that were sort of, and maybe this was just me creating a narrative in my own head, but sort of symbolic of some of the past failures. Obviously, there was a foul ball late in the game down the left field line, and even the Cubs talked about, like, we didn't even think much of it. We didn't really care. We're like, who cares? It doesn't matter. And that's how I kind of felt. I thought it was almost, not funny, but just it's ironic in nature. And then you have one out in the eighth inning, and somebody gets on base. And I remember kind of laughing. I'm like, ah, that's like, it's like, you know, baseball God's playing a stupid joke. But it was never a point where I was like, oh God, there's five outs left. They get a guy on base. Here it goes. Here it comes. But it was just so enjoyable. And it was, and going into the ninth inning and they get the guy on and Puig steps up. And I remember as soon as he hit the ball, I just stood up and screamed, this is it. And it just was, it was so perfect. And I'll always remember that. Certainly if they win four out of the next seven games, that'll be the true sports nirvana and the peak of it all. But for the time being, for them to do it at home in front of all these people and how loud it was and how crazy Wrigley was, it was something we've wanted, you know, obviously forever. Even going back to this podcast that we started 6 years ago, which seems minuscule almost compared to the 71-year World Series drought. But I was thinking earlier, and I was talking to one of my friends who used to be a little listener and still is, but used to follow the Cubs minor league as well. And we talked about, you know, joking about the talk on this podcast, talking about who's going to start for the Cubs in September 2010. Are they going to call up Thomas Diamond, or is Casey Coleman going to get the start?
Thomas Diamond. Oh, my God. And that name.
Going to see a Marquez Smith maybe in September. Like, this is what we were talking about. And we loved it. We had a great time. Don't get me wrong. But it's just hilarious that that's what we were talking about. And now we're sitting here preparing you, hopefully, for a Cubs World Series victory in a relatively short period of time. I get anything can happen in sports, but the turnaround that this regime has done is just remarkable. And it's just fun to be sitting here talking about this with you, knowing that tomorrow night, in 24 hours, the Cubs are going to be playing in a World Series game.
Yeah, I mean, hard to believe almost, Beto. It still feels like it's not even real. I mean, just watching some of the coverage today on the MLB Network and seeing the Cubs players wearing World Series caps and sweatshirts and seeing the pictures of Wrigley Field this morning
with the
logo on the field. I mean, it's like it chills. Yeah. I mean, it's honestly like it's almost like, as a fan, at least in, I think, our generation, I guess are we millennials or what exactly are we? I guess we're millennials, right? So I guess like in our generation, I think that there were more fans that probably believed that one day it would happen, but it was sort of like this nebulous thing. Like, in your mind, you might have said, oh, I believe one day in my life the Cubs will play in the World Series. But you probably didn't really think about what it would actually be other than to just smile at the thought. Like, I never really thought about the details of what it would be like other than, like, how excited or happy I would be if they won. And now, to have witnessed them winning the pennant and to have seen just today, seeing them on a field in Cleveland getting ready for the World Series, seeing all the national attention that they're getting, seeing just how, like, walking through the city, walking home from work this morning, seeing the W flags everywhere, seeing people in Cubs gear everywhere. I've never seen this. I mean, in 2003, yes, there was like people in Cubs gear and things of that nature, but I feel like nothing has ever been like this or quite like this. It's just unbelievable. It is so exciting. And literally everywhere I walked over the weekend after they won on Saturday, Sunday, I was walking to the store and everyone on their phone was talking about the Cubs. It's just, it has taken over this city in such an amazing way.
It really has. And you know what's cool about it now is you just have access to everything that you want to see. Just whether you're on social media or on YouTube and the videos that the Cubs pump out through their official Twitter account and things of that nature. You just have so much access, so you just take it all in. And I can't get enough. I feel like that guy that just constantly reading articles and watching videos over and over. But how often are you going to be able to do something like this and experience something like this? So it does take priority over a lot of things in everyday life. And that's what's so cool about it. And you mentioned downtown, seeing all this Cubs stuff. I was downtown. You at the Merchandise Mart. They have a W flag up and they keep adding one in one of their windows every time the Cubs get a postseason win. Elsewhere on Wacker, they had this gigantic W flag. There's LaSalle and Hubbard's got this really like cool blue fountain with a big W flag over it. And it's just everywhere. It's certainly caught on. And even if they're not super baseball people, which obviously there are out there that are rooting for the Cubs, it's still cool for them to see because they know it's awesome for the city. And we're just looking forward to the next step. But for the time being, I've seen some people kind of taking jabs like, they haven't even won anything. They haven't won the World Series yet. They've celebrated more than any LCS team ever to win. And it was like, well, you know what? They haven't been there in forever. Who's to say you can't celebrate something this special? And we had a great time. Nobody's saying that it's over and that we're not going to celebrate this way when you get the World Series. But so many people that have been through not just our generation, but in the past, there was always an element of doubt of like, oh, my God, am I going to be alive to ever see them play in a World Series? Well, now that's now answered. So I just can't wait to get rolling here.
It's pretty incredible. And I mean, it's just, there was something about this team. I mean, I was on the air late into the night on Saturday night after they won. And I think that there's no connection to a team like the Cubs connection to its fan base because of the futility. I mean, I know that sounds sort of like two opposite ideas that you'd be connected to something that is about failure, but the Cubs history is failure, but the Cubs fan base is united in it. And what is so amazing about what they did is they have brought so many emotions to the forefront for so many people. I mean, the idea that, like, I had people calling the station at 2 o'clock in the morning who were crying on the air, talking about how much they, you know, a 74-year-old guy who was talking about how much he wishes his father could have seen this.
Yep.
Or the 54-year-old man who called and said that he buried his father 2 years ago and how much this would have meant to him. Or the people that have been waiting their whole lives just for themselves to see this, and just the generations of people. Because, listen, my grandfather's 81, and I saw him yesterday, and he was 10 when the Cubs last were in the World Series. And he remembers as a kid watching Hank Baroe pitch in the World Series against the Tigers. I mean, but that's how long ago it was, which is obviously an indictment of the franchise that they were so unsuccessful for so long. And that's another podcast for another day. But the idea now that they are erasing the awful, frankly, history of this franchise with one really special team. And to get to this World Series, if they win the World Series, Beto, it changes everything about what the Chicago Cubs are. It changes the whole lovable loser thing. That's gone. If they win the World Series, it's no longer about Billy Coates and Billy Goats and Black Cats and Bartman. It's about they're winners. And that's never been the case since 1945. I mean, yeah, they were winners in the dead ball era, and they were winners, you know, for in the early stages of baseball. But in the modern history of the game, they have been a punchline. And now here they are on the precipice of history and a championship. It's just, it's so mind-blowing in so many ways, and such a just juxtaposition, frankly, from what they were for so long.
Yeah, most definitely. And I know you think about, I remember watching in 2004 when the Red Sox finally ended their long drought, the 86 years, and watching the final out of Edgar Renteria hitting a little comebacker to Keith Falk and then flipping it to Doug Minkiewicz at first and being like, oh my gosh, they did it. Look at these people celebrate. Like, I cannot wait till it's our turn. and we're rewarded. And 12 years later, we have the opportunity to do so. And it rewards it, what it is. It's reward. It sounds cliche, but it's rewarding hope in something and belief in something. And, you know, following the Cubs for this long or however old you are, and you get rewarded for it. And, you know, perseverance, not that you have to work hard to be a Cubs fan, but you have to believe in something when things aren't going well. And now all you're reaping all the benefits with how good this team is. And secondly, you touched on it too, is it brings up memories of when you were 9, 10, 11 years old, regardless if you're 31 like we are now or you're 75 and you're watching games with your dad or your mom or anyone else. And you would love for them to be there because this is what you like to do growing up. So that's the other thing. It kind of triggers some of those memories, and I think that's why people get so attached to it as well. And we're fortunate that it's weird to say that we're fortunate because we've only been here for 31 years and finally get the chance to do the World Series or see a Cubs team in a World Series, because there's people older than us, there's people that never saw it. So we just got to drink it all in and hope for the best over the next week and a half.
Yeah, I mean, this is pretty incredible. And now we shift our focus, Beto, to game one of the World Series, which is tomorrow between the Cubs and the Cleveland Indians. Your overall thoughts, first of all, just on this matchup. I mean, this is, I think, a really interesting matchup in a lot of different ways. And these two teams obviously got here in different ways, but I think it's going to be a fascinating, you know, however many games it goes.
It's an excellent matchup because, history aside, because Cleveland hasn't won since 48.
Right.
And if you ever seen the movie Major League, they say that right at the beginning. They have a picture of the 1948 World Series champions. And this is a team that's had some success in recent decades. You look at the mid-90s and 95 and 97. You look at those rosters, and they're just loaded. And then you get to 2007, they got hot. They blew a 3-1 series lead to the Boston Red Sox.
I mean, if only Serrano could have hit a curveball.
Yeah, exactly. If he hit his home run off of whatever that dude's. Oh, and the Duke was the one that gave up the bunt to Jake Taylor in the ninth. But yes. Anyways, you look at this team, and this roster doesn't have the name power that some of those 90s teams with guys like Jim Thome and Manny Ramirez and Carlos Baerga and Kenny Lofton and Albert Bell and things of that nature. However, this is a team that is built very, very well, and a team that's caters more to the new age of baseball. They are red hot right now. They're a team that I picked to win the American League Central at the beginning of the year. I didn't expect them, once they got to the playoffs, to go on this run because of the injuries to Danny Salazar, which we can get to here in a second, and Carlos Carrasco and this patchwork rotation they have. They have an outstanding bullpen. They work the counts. They have an outstanding manager who has been October tested, as we know, with the Boston Red Sox.
More accomplished than Joe Maddon.
Absolutely more accomplished than Joe Maddon. Him and Bochy are the guys that I feel like are kind of in that category, but are maybe separated from Maddon because they've won World Series multiple times, in fact. And and he knows how to. He's not afraid to do things that he feels confident can work that haven't been done before. We're talking about going to the bullpen early, using your best relievers in the game when the situation matters most. Doesn't always have to be the eighth or ninth inning. We've seen that with Andrew Miller, the ALCS MVP, and not a guy that's going to be worried about running on someone like John Lester. And this is a team that's red hot. They sweep the Boston Red Sox, who I thought was going to represent the American League in the World Series. Then they go out and beat the Blue Jays in five games. They shut down a magnificent lineup. With that all being said, they are red hot. They're an excellent group. The Cubs are the better team on paper. And we can break this down. They are better offensively. They are better with the starting staff, especially depleted Indian staff. They're better in the field. Bullpen, probably not.
I would say Indians have a better bullpen.
Indians have a better bullpen. I think that's an easy thing to say. However, the Cubs should have the advantage. Both teams have a ton of momentum, as you expect with two World Series teams. But I don't think this is a team. I don't think the Cubs are taking the Indians lightly. Everyone's just kind of assuming that the Cubs are going to walk from here, and maybe they do. But at the same time, this is an excellent Cleveland Indians team that's going to make the Cubs work.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, this is going to be no easy task. And I think that it's going to be absolutely fascinating to see how the running game for Cleveland becomes a factor in this series, because one thing that we didn't see, Brian, in the first two series against the Giants and the Dodgers was really any semblance of a running game. I mean, the Dodgers, you know, were doing the Carlton off of first base to try to mess with John Lester, which was ridiculous, but they didn't ever take any bases. I mean, it was like, I didn't understand what the whole purpose of that was, unless Alfonso Ribeiro was going to lead off for them. It made no sense. So the point is, like, if the Indians take big leads on John Lester, they will intend to run. This is a team that had the fourth most stolen bases in baseball in the regular season. Rajai Davis had 43 steals. They had four guys on this roster that had at least 15 stolen bases. So they will take a base on you. They will challenge you in the run game. And that's something that, of all the things the Cubs pitching staff does well, they're really not great at holding runners on. So that is going to be part of the cat and mouse game, I think, in terms of how the Cubs are able to keep, A, keep runners off base, but B, how they keep them from advancing bases when they get on, because I believe that is something that the Indians will try to push the envelope with, because that's not out of their character to run the bases. That's something that they do. Another thing I think in this series that's going to be of critical importance is the Indians, like you said, don't really have the pitching depth. Now, Danny Salazar is supposed to be on the Indians World Series roster, but he has not pitched since September 9th. I don't know whether that means that he comes out of the bullpen for relief or whether they have enough confidence to start him in game four. I mean, I think that if I would guess at this point that Corey Kluber is going to go games 1, 4, and 7 because they just don't have the other starters to go with. So I would think that that's probably what you're looking at. But I think that, you know, Kluber's a heck of a pitcher, but I don't think he's like as good as he is. And I know that he's an AL Cy Young candidate. I don't feel like he's that terrifying, unbeatable type pitcher. I think he's just a great pitcher, if that makes sense. I know that it sounds like a little bit of an odd distinction, but maybe that makes sense. I think, though, that, you know, after Kluber, that's where the rotation starts to drop off. The key for me is, can the Cubs score early? Because the Indians are a team that gets better as the game goes along with their bullpen. And if the Cubs get ahead, it matters less when Andrew Miller comes into the game if you're winning. If Andrew Miller doesn't come into the game because you're winning, then you've done the job. You know, if it's a 2-2 game in the sixth inning, it puts more pressure on you because Miller's going to come in at some point. You better score before he gets into the game. So I think that early scoring is going to be really important, and I think that the Cubs will have the opportunities to score early against Indian starters because they aren't great starters after Kluber, but that is really going to put pressure on their offense early in games to get on the board like they did against Clayton Kershaw in Game 6.
The Cubs got to score early. You said it. That's one of the keys for that. I'm sure that's what they've talked about. Not that they can't come from behind late or win a close game down the stretch. However, if you tell Terry Francona that every game's going to be tied in the sixth inning and then we'll go from there, he's going to take it 100 times out of 100 just because the Cubs do have more depth and more talent at the starting pitching, and he knows he's got that bullpen that he can use and has used successfully so far in this series. And Andrew Miller with multiple innings, because he's got someone like Cody Allen, and they got a few other guys they can use at their disposal. And even though their starting pitching depth isn't great, nobody says starters in the playoff have to go 6 or 7 innings. So even with Danny Salazar, who they're saying might be able to go 60 to 70 pitches, well, that works out very well to an extent. If Trevor Bauer is still having issues with his pinky finger, then you go to Salazar. Or in game four, if they decide to go to Salazar, you go 4 innings like they did against the Blue Jays, and then you bring in a plethora of other pitchers. So they also have Mike Clevinger, who could come in and fill kind of a starting slash long relief role. So it'll be interesting to see what they go with. I think one of the things that hasn't been brought up a ton, and I do think there's some merit to bringing this up, is while the Indians love to use their bullpen and multiple innings in the middle of the game, when the series does shift to Wrigley Field, you have to be a little more creative with when you use Andrew Miller, based on the fact that the pitcher spot is going to come up in the order. That's never something you have to worry about in an American League ballpark or the American playoffs. And maybe it doesn't end up being something that happens or a situation occurs like that, but it does change it a little bit in how they have to use their bullpen when the series does shift to Chicago for games 3, 4, and 5. So that's a little bit more of a chess match than I guess you're used to and what the Indians have been used to in American League playoffs so far.
Yeah, no, that's a great point, Brian. I actually think, and I'm curious what you think of this, I feel as though in baseball, in the 2-3-2 format, that the road team has the advantage. Is that crazy? Because I think that it puts so much pressure on the home team to win their home games early in a series that, I mean, I'll put it this way. The Cubs did an amazing thing by winning 2 out of 3 in Los Angeles to come home and win the series, because I often feel like if the road team gets a split at home in games 1 and 2, or on the road rather, in games 1 and 2, you come home with 3 games after that. I mean, if the Cubs split in Cleveland, all they have to do is split. Wouldn't you feel really good about your chances to have 3 straight games at Wrigley Field? I mean, I feel like it should be 2-2-1-1-1 like it is in the NBA or in hockey. And I feel like the format sometimes benefits the road team more than the home team in these series.
Yeah, no, I definitely see there's water to that point. And you look at even it's been a smaller sample. The road team, it hasn't really bothered them at all having home field disadvantage in the World Series in the past, and going back to when they made the All-Star game, the deciding factor in who gets home field advantage. It's a very valid point. A 2-2-1-1-1, as some people have speculated, that maybe it should just be 3-4. So it gives the home team a chance to win one on the road, and then you know you have 4 potential home games if need be. And, it's definitely something worth bringing up. But I agree with you. I keep telling everyone, if the Cubs can get one, whether it be tomorrow night or Wednesday night, and they come home and they're looking at, I don't think they've announced game 2 officially yet. I'm guessing it's going to be Arrieta. But if you have game 3, Hendricks at home, who was just outstanding in the clincher, great at home all year. John Lackey, who's also been excellent at home, has yet to get a home start during the postseason. And then John Lester in game 5. The Indians got a pretty tall task to even try to get one in theory in that spot. So I definitely see your point and how there is some advantage at times if you're able to get those 3 games at home in the middle of the series.
So now when you look at the other big storyline, which is broken tonight, as it is Monday, October 24th, I honestly, when I heard that this was a possibility, I started laughing because it seemed so incredibly absurd to even think a few weeks ago that this would be possible. But according to John Morosi of Fox Sports, Kyle Schwarber is going to DH in game 1 tomorrow night in the World Series. I mean,
this is unreal.
This is like, I don't want to go Kirk Gibson on you because he hasn't done anything yet and it might not work out, but right. It feels like that, doesn't it?
It does. And if he does do something big, Kirk Gibson is a very fair comparison. I mean, you look at it's like out of a movie almost. Just yeah. Things that you don't see happen too much that you really just expect to not be real life and to be fiction. But in a scenario like this where, and maybe you're right, maybe he goes up and his timing's off, it goes 0-for-4 with a couple of Ks and nothing happens. However, it makes a lot of sense. And I am in total agreement of this move. And it's not just for the rah-rah, nostalgic sort of a point of view or opinion. It makes sense baseball-wise. And the reason being is that obviously the DH, that goes without saying, the Cleveland Indians are very right-hand dominant. And outside of Trevor Bauer, who has some reverse splits this year, has done better against lefties than righties, the other guys haven't for the most part. And Schwarber, that big bat, left-handed bat in the middle of the lineup, the guy that they kind of wanted Jason Hayward to be all year that he hasn't, and you insert Schwarber in there, and people who are concerned about, well, it really hurts their versatility because he can't play the field, he can only hit. It doesn't hurt their versatility. No. They have Zobrist, Bryant, Baez can play anywhere. Contreras can play in the outfield.
Cogs. So, I mean, what about Cogs?
Yeah, Cogs. But he might be the guy that Schwarber replaces.
What about Soler? Because I feel like Soler could be off the roster.
That's another really
because
valid.
Because what does Soler offer you that Schwarber doesn't? You're not going to put Soler in the field. The guy's a meat carver in right field, so you can't put him out there. And you can't, I mean, it, to me,
he hit lefties. That's about it. And yeah, he still might not be totally healthy. That's something else you have to consider.
No, I understand that. But the guy's a butcher in the outfield. That's why I went with the meat carver slang. But I honestly, I just think that he's a horrible outfielder. And so if he can't play the field, and you're only going to have Soler, let's be honest. The only reason Soler was on the roster was because you were hoping he would hit a home run as a pinch hitter. That's it. He's not going to defend. He can't run. I mean, Kyle Schwarber's not going to field, and he can't really run either at this point. So it's not like you're going to put him in left field or play him in the field at all. And you're really just using Kyle Schwarber as a DH and hoping that he, you know, comes through for you offensively. So if that's the role that Kyle Schwarber is going to play, he's basically a left-handed Soler for the purposes of this series. So it's just a matter of whether you want the righty banger off the bench or the lefty banger, and I would rather have Schwarber in this situation.
Or would you – I think I would – if they're going to do a hitter, I think I would lean Coughlin personally. However, I'm not convinced they're just going to kick a hitter off the roster to bring in Schwarber.
Well,
Rob Zastrzyzny is certainly a possibility as well. He wasn't part of the roster in the DS, but the Cubs opted to go with another pitcher in the LA series because of the Dodgers' woes against left-handed pitching all season long. Now that you're back in the American League, or for, you know, maybe four games, at least the first two, you don't have to necessarily use your pen up that much because you don't need to go to a pinch hitter. So you're allowed to use guys at your own discretion, not having to worry about when their spot is up in the order. So as a result, does it make sense just to eliminate that extra pitcher and go with Schwarber, and that way you have all of the options off the bench as far as hitting is concerned, and you'll have extra pinch hitter when the series does move back to Wrigley Field on Friday through Sunday. So another option too, but I think 100% this is the right move. I know it's kind of a gamble, but at the same time, is it really though? Because what have Soler and Coughlin done for this team in the playoffs? They haven't really appeared.
The only difference is, and again, by the time most people listen to this podcast, the roster will probably be out, but I think that they'd keep Coughlin just because he could play multiple positions. You can finagle things.
But is he playing second all year even?
No, but the point is, in an emergency situation, you could put him at second. You could put him in right or left. I mean, you could put him in different places, whereas you do not have that option with Schwarber with Soler. So
disagreed. Schwarber at short, Schwarber on the mound.
Schwarber everywhere, my friend. Let the guy pitch, okay? He's going to do it all for that. No, I mean, listen, I don't even know. There's a part of me that feels like this is a huge risk because you don't want Schwarber to injure himself more where next year he's not able to play. But I guess, you know what? You're in the World Series. You go for it. You do what you have to do. And the guy, I think, is one of those types of players that could just get out of bed and hit a home run. I mean, I don't
for
know
sure.
how much.
He's like us, you know, growing up.
Right, exactly. I mean, I was the real power guy as a pitcher. So I and my 74-mile-an-hour fastball.
You're like so, Arrieta, right, as a hitter?
Oh, God. I mean, that's what they were calling me, Big Jake. So, no, I mean, I don't know if
a Jake Day, they called it Jordan Day every time.
I grew a huge beard as a 18-year-old. No, I couldn't even grow a beard as an 18-year-old, I don't think. But I just think that Schwarber, the idea of him, I think that's almost maybe more of it than anything else. I don't even know what he's going to contribute, but I almost feel like the idea of him supersedes maybe the reality of him at this point. And that if you're the Indians, you at least have to think about the idea that he could put one on top of the scoreboard, right? I mean, I feel like it's more of that than anything else.
Without a doubt, in the Cubs' strength offensively has it been all years. It's working deep counts, grounding out at bats, and you know, having pitcher worry about you, and that's why they're not attacking the strike zone. And Schwarber adds more of that because, yes, you're right. He at any point has the threat of hitting the ball on top of the video board, and as evident in last year's playoffs. So you have to be concerned about him in the middle of the lineup, regardless of the fact that he hasn't played since what game three of the season. So it's a situation where I think just makes a ton of sense, and he's not going to be busting it from first to third per se if he gets on base. If he gets a single as a pinch hitter or late in the game and you need him, then just pinch run for him. That's why maybe you replace a pitcher instead of the hitter. So he's not going to play in the field, and it just he adds a different element to this lineup of a power hitting middle of the order hitter. Yes, the Cubs have Bryant. Yes, they have Rizzo. But outside of that, they have some guys that are capable of hitting the long ball, but no crazy home run threat that's in there every day. And Schwarber adds that element. He adds it from the left side of the plate against a predominantly a right-handed pitching group. And that's why I think it makes a lot of sense. And you probably DH game one, maybe game two, depending on what they opt to go with as a pinch hitter off the bench in games 3, 4, and 5. And it'll be a nice lift for this group when he does and is announced tomorrow. And everyone's like, oh, my gosh, Kyle Schwarber. Like, can you believe this? Out for the season, comes back for the World Series. You cannot script it any better than that.
You know what? You just hit on something that I think is going to happen. They're not going to take Zastrzyzny because they don't need the extra pitcher with four games in the American League Park.
I agree. That's what
it's going to be. It's going to be Schwarber for Zastrzyzny. So we're not going to have to hear all the national media butcher his name 5,000 times. So,
Z-Man.
Big Z, right?
Yeah. Big Z.
Fear for all Gatorade coolers everywhere.
Exactly.
But, gosh, thank God those years are over. So, anyway, we are now about, as we're recording right now, we're literally 24 hours away from first pitch between the Chicago Cubs and the Cleveland Indians in the Fall Classic. So, Brian Beto, I know that all season long you've been predicting victories in sweeps or weeks in sweeps or no actual losses. But what is your World Series prediction for your Chicago Cubs?
Well, I will say that we both accurately predicted the Cubs winning in 6 games.
We
correct?
Did do that, yes.
The Badgers. We were both one off in the DS. I had a Cubs sweep. You had them in 5. We met in the middle.
We did.
This year, and I do want to – I want to get like super sappy here. Before I give the prediction, I think one of the coolest parts about all of this, and we haven't really touched on, is the people bringing up the ex-Cubs players and fans and family members that have either gone before them or maybe just aren't as relevant anymore. I think Kerry Wood wearing a Ron Santo jersey, throwing out the first pitch, was about as cool as it gets. You have a living Cubs player who wasn't able to experience a World Series, paying homage to another former Cubs player who has passed that never made it to the World Series. And that's the people that we should never kind of take for granted or forget about, because we're the lucky ones to witness this. And just people who have contributed to your fandom, even if they are still around. I look at the 90s and I'm a huge fan, partly because of Sean Dunstan. So thank you, Sean Dunstan and Ryan Sandberg and Mark Grace and Joe Girardi and that era growing up. And before that, Sandberg and Say and Dernier. And then before that, Williams and Banks and Willie Smith even, and Ken Holtzman and all those guys. So it's so cool to see, those guys pay homage to that, which they're going to do for another series here. And what I think is going to happen, and I've been positive all year long, I think the Cubs fall on the short end of the stick in game one tomorrow night in Cleveland. I hope I'm wrong, but then I think they win 4 consecutive games. They beat the Cleveland Indians in 5 games, and they capture their first World Series championship since 1908.
In 5 games.
Mm-hmm.
At 5 games.
It won't be this. What we saw Saturday night, not going to be the last party at Wrigley Field. Last time we're going to see them celebrating at Wrigley this year. That's my prediction. 5 games for the Cubs.
That would just be complete insanity.
Sunday night, baby.
Oh, my God. I'm already calling in sick. I
already did. I took off all next week already. I'm not kidding. It's off.
Did you
it's
really?
Been off for,
that's incredible.
A month ago, I took off next week.
That's
I'm not
incredible.
The guy that gets the tattoo prematurely, but I'm the guy that takes off a week off work early just in case. You got to be forward thinking just in case it did happen, and here we are 4 wins away.
Yes, I agree. I'm going to go Cubs in six. I would love for it to happen at 5. I mean, that would just be incredible. If it happened at Wrigley Field, it'd be storybook. But I just feel like you got to give the Indians credit, and they're a really good team. And this is not going to be an easy series, I don't think. I do think the Cubs are going to win. I don't think that's being a homer. I think that they're the better team in this series, just as they were in the Dodgers series and just as they were in the Giants series. So I believe that the Cubs are going to win this thing. I would love to see it happen to Wrigley. That would be magic. But if they win it, it doesn't matter if they won the thing on the moon. They'll win the World Series, and it would be the greatest thing. So I'm going to go with I'm going to go with the Cubs in six. But, I mean, to see it at Wrigley Sunday night would just be insane. So, yeah. Either way, I hope that the next time we podcast, Brian Beto, it is to say the World Series champion Chicago Cubs. I mean, because to say the Cubs in the World Series is already insane. But if they are the world champions, I think I don't even know. I started to tear up when they won the pennant on Saturday night. I really did. I was tearing up in the moment.
I fought back. I wanted to save the tears for the next one. It was difficult to do. If I was there like you were.
It wasn't a cry. It wasn't like a full blown cry, but there were tears.
Tear up. You bit into a pepper. You know, you're cutting onions.
I was cutting onions. Yeah.
Yeah. I get it. And I'm just so, what's cool is that, you know, Pat Hughes' call was so great. Just being able to hear him say the Cubs are going to the World Series, the Cubs win the pennant, and I'm sure he's rehearsed what his line's going to be forever if they do win it. So just the possibility of hearing that, hearing Joe Buck, who's kind of been the voice of TV or the TV voice of national baseball for a long time now and through the years, hearing him call the final out would be great. And just and by the way, I know we got to sign off here, but I just wanted to say, I hate the Joe Buck hates my team narrative. We don't have to really get into this.
Oh, Joe God, I know.
He's praising Clayton Kershaw because Clayton Kershaw is the best pitcher in the world. He said it would be one of the highlights of his career if he got to a Cubs World Series. You know, so those people that wants to get rid of Joe Buck, he does not hate your team.
No,
I promise.
No, Carmen and I interviewed him on WGN like 4 years ago about this. When the Cubs were horrible, and he said on the I asked him, and he said that he would love and I mean, okay, why wouldn't any national broadcaster want to be on the call for one of the most famous calls in the history of sports?
Oh my gosh!
And like this idea that like he hates the Cubs and
because he has all his
dad. Cardinal fan, like yeah. I mean, do I believe he probably is a Cardinal fan? Probably deep down, yeah, I'm sure he grew up a Cardinals fan. I mean, do I think that he would in a perfect world want the Cubs to win? Probably not. But do I think that professionally that he wants to be on the call when the Cubs win the World Series? Hell yeah, he does.
The holy grail of sports championships. Yes. David Ross said it the other day, of course he wants to be the guy on the mic when he calls that. Yeah, he's not sitting there in a Schwarber jersey right now, but that narrative just bothers me. And I know
it's because he's in a Leicester jersey. He's not in a Schwarber.
Exactly. Sitting in Cleveland right now in room service wearing a Leicester jersey and listening to Go Cubs Go, Here Come the Cubs and a dying Cubs fan's last request on repeat right now. Yeah. It's just
and Vetter someday will go all the way.
Go all the way. He's crying. His eyes are closed. He's swaying back and forth.
By the way, did you, and I know we have to sign off too, but did you see on the TV broadcast after they won, they pan up to the skybox where Theo is?
Yeah.
And Theo hugs, I presume that was his wife that he hugged.
Yep.
And then Vetter like has his arm out, like Vetter, like I think Vetter thought he was getting the first hug. Am I wrong? Did you
see
this?
I get first hug, right? Like, well, no Theo wife, but the guy who wrote the song gets the first hug.
Am I being unfair? I honestly think, because Vetter's arm is out, I think Vetter was assuming first hug.
I got to be John Fox. I got to look at the tape here, and then I'll...
I'm telling you, go back and watch it.
I'm gonna.
Because, I mean, the wife has to be the first hug.
Insta hug wife.
I mean, I would.
You gotta go straight. I mean,
it's either his wife or it's Jed. It's not Eddie.
No, Eddie's not a first hug guy.
He's at least third, fourth hug.
Eddie making the VIP box going upstairs is good enough. He should be happy. He sat next to Theo.
I think it's kind of annoying that he was in the box, but that's another discussion. But it is kind
like
of annoying.
Simbalucci or something like that.
I mean, he did the play ball. I mean, they had the ball there. I'm just saying. I thought.
They're boys. He's a Pearl Jam fan. They're fanboys of each other.
I like Vetter. I'm a fan of Pearl Jam. I'm just saying that I think he thought he had first hug rights, which is really presumptuous on his part.
Oh, boy. That's. I'll have to take a look at that, but. I'm guessing that was his wife too, and instantly that's where you go to. And you know, either that or a Jet or a Tom Ricketts sort of thing for bringing him on. And but Vetter, you're not on tier one of the hog list of theater.
No, you're not even top three. If you get into top three, it's as big an upset as Peyton Manning kissing Papa John after the Super Bowl.
But I think that was more of a lock. I actually thought that was going to happen.
I mean, I guess that's true. What can you do? I mean, listen, the two of them have made a lot of money together. So,
yeah. Whatever. We'll whatever floats their boat. I mean, he can hug whoever the heck he wants at this point. I mean, he can hug Joe Buck. He can hug whoever first if he gets the next amount of outs here.
Yes. All right. So, you can find our podcast on Facebook where, Brian Beto?
You could search for the B Squared Show on Facebook again. It's worked the last two times, and I posted to the personal account again, and hopefully get the friends and fam updated on the B Squared happenings. Individually, you can follow us on Twitter, Mr. Extended Post Game Host, on Saturday night, and you can follow Jordan at Jordan Burnfield. And as we say, we're very creative. I'm at Brian Beto. So. We get straight to the point here. You know what I mean? We don't need all this, like, the real Jordan Burnfield. So, plus you're verified, man. We don't need to put the real in front of you. You got the blue check mark, you know?
I think that was probably a scam. I mean, I don't even deserve it.
But I thought you were somebody else.
Yes, it has to be what it is. But yeah, so you can find us on Twitter there. You can find us on Podomatic and also on iTunes. Please subscribe. And regardless of what happens, we will do one final podcast this season. But let's hope, Brian Beto, that the next time we speak, we are talking about the Chicago Cubs winning the World Series.
I'd like it. I'd like to get on the podcast next and say it happened.
Yep.
So we'll see.
Yep.
We'll see. Good luck. And everyone enjoy the next week and a half.
Enjoy the ride, guys. It's going to be, guys and girls, it's going to be a lot of fun. And we're going to have a great time. And hopefully the Cubs will win four games. For Brian, I'm Jordan. Thanks for listening to the B Squared podcast. And we'll talk to you after the Cubs win the World Series.